Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema Rewind. This is Rob Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick. Rob and I are out this week, so we are bringing you an older episode of Weird House Cinema. This was our feature on The Abominable Dr. Fibes. I think one of my favorites we've done, an excellent weird outing of Vincent Price. This one originally published on April 1st, 2022, but there is nothing April Foolish about it. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick. And woo, I hope you like organ music, because today we're doing Dr. Fibes.
That's right. The Abominable Dr. Fibes from 1971. This is a film that is frequently described as a dark comedy horror film, which is a way of saying this movie's weird and we don't really know how to classify it, you know, because it certainly has, yeah, it has comedic flair in it. It has horror flair. But it's ultimately its own unique weird vision. And it's really difficult to compare it 100% to just about anything else.
I would almost say it's a musical, though the characters don't sing songs. There are a lot of musical numbers and dancing.
Yes. Yeah. It's very theatrical. In trying to come up with an elevator pitch for it, I was thinking it's kind of Phantom of the Opera meets Batman meets a wax museum horror movie in a swanky, unoccupied nightclub for stylish madmen.
But also, you have to say the words Vincent Price, because yes. I think that is a key element of establishing the themes.
Yeah, I think this is our first Vincent Price film. And Fibes has been on our list. It's been on our radar for a while. And I know we've heard from at least a couple of listeners suggesting it. And it came up again recently when I was looking at films that had very well-regarded movie scores. And so, yeah, this is our first Vincent Price film, though we did discuss The Tingler from 1959 on an old episode of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, but that was pre-Weird House. That was more of we used The Tingler as a springboard to discuss some science or vice versa.
You know, I would say The Tingler is somewhat different because The Tingler is a William Castle movie mm-hmm. that has Vincent Price in it. But lots of Vincent Price movies, it almost feels as if it doesn't matter who the director is, and it just becomes a Vincent Price movie. I would say this is one of those.
It is, and then on the same level, one thing I kept thinking about is, okay, Vincent Price plays a character in this film that doesn't actually speak with his voice anymore. Mm-hmm. You hear Vincent Price's voice, but it's like a It's like a, through a machine. And right. So it's unique to be watching this and you think, oh, well, you know, Vincent Price is great, like as a visual performer. He has this amazing voice. And yet we have a character who's in many ways mute in this film. And it kind of applies to other characters in the film as well. Like a lot of the people in this film are just part of the set piece. It's about creating this theatrical vision.
Somehow, though, even though he doesn't speak with his mouth in the movie, the Price ham juice gets on everything. Mm-hmm. Like, the Vincent Price campiness comes through in the energy exuded by every other actor in the film. And I was going to compare it to another great horror movie that I just watched within the last year, because they are so similar. This other movie is called Theater of Blood from 1973, so it came out 2 years after Dr. Fibes. But if you can believe this, listen to all the parallels. Both movies star Vincent Price as a performing artist of some kind who is presumed dead but returns to enact an elaborate plan of revenge on a list of 9 specific enemies, targeting each one in a succession of sort of themed murders. And in Dr. Fibes, the themed murders are based on the 10 plagues of Egypt in the Book of Exodus. And in Theater of Blood, they're based on deaths in the plays of Shakespeare. And in both movies, the Price character has a cool younger female sidekick. In Theater of Blood, that is actually Vincent Price's character's daughter, played by Diana Rigg, who
is
always great.
Yeah,
Diana Rigg, one of my favorites. And in that one, she's great, but also in that one, Vincent Price plays a ham Shakespearean actor instead of an organist.
All right. Well, those are certainly some Fibe vibes. You're definitely vibing with Fibes there.
Yes.
One thing that I was thinking about, especially towards the end of this picture, and we'll discuss the plot here in a bit, was that this film, The Abominable Dr. Fibes, it's kind of like the precursor to such dreary themed murder films as Seven, I'm thinking like Resurrection, and of course the Saw movies. Except this movie is like, what if you had something like that and it was at least 10 times as fun? You know?
More than that. Yeah, this is the exact opposite. This is a weird, elaborate themed murders, but just bouncing on rays of sunshine.
Yes.
So I think Dr. Fibes is one of my new show favorites. It's going on the list with, I think, some of the best movies we've watched on here. Like, I don't keep a running list of my favorites, but they're somewhere in my head. It's got to be like Mad Love, Robot Jocks, Ship of Monsters, and Inframan. And this one's going up there, too.
Yeah, it's extremely watchable. I can easily recommend this one to film fans of different genres because it does transcend genre. It's not just a horror film. It's just so stylish, so lovingly stylish that I feel like it can suck in just about anybody. Like you just about any given scene, even the scenes that don't take place within Dr. Fibes' subterranean organ funhouse are still like lavishly decorated and ingeniously shot.
Totally agree.
All right, well, let's go ahead and listen to the trailer here.
What lovely music for a murder, or two, or three, or 9.
Who's this?
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet a dear friend.
9 killed you. 9 shall die.
Your wife, no Fibes. But you I will kill.
But you can't, Doctor. I am already dead.
The what, sir?
The Qatar. The 10 curses visited upon the pharaohs before Exodus.
Ready for Dr. Fibes?
All right, let's talk about some of the people involved in this motion picture. First of all, let's start at the top with the director, Robert Foost. Foost lived 1927 through 2012. British director, noted for his unique genre style. It should come as no surprise to some fans out there that he came up through the Avengers TV show before making such features as 1970's And Soon the Darkness, a thriller, a 1970 adaptation of Wuthering Heights with Timothy Dalton as Heathcliff, followed by the two Dr. Fibes films, 1973's The Final Program, which was based on a Michael Moorcock novel starring John Finch, and 1975's satanic meltomania movie The Devil's Reign, starring Ernest Borgnine, The Shat, Tom Skerritt, John Travolta, and of course, Anton LaVey.
I was wondering if we should come back to The Devil's Reign on Weird House. It is notorious for being not very good, but also being
great.
Sort of worth seeing. Yeah.
Yeah. It has greatness in it. And I think maybe we'll be in a better place to understand it, having experienced Fibes. But and also it's possible that maybe the world just wasn't ready for The Devil's Reign, especially when you look at his filmography, because it looks like he mostly did TV after The Devil's Reign. All right. The writers on this, they're two credited writers. James Whitten, born 1930, died 2016, American writer who wrote the story for 1982's Murder by Phone, starring Richard Chamberlain. And then there's also William Goldstein, credited on both Fibes movies, plus 1976's The Amazing Dobermans, in which, quote, an ex-con man and his five trained Dobermans help a Treasury Department agent stop a racketeer and his gang. It starred James Franciscus, Barbara Eden, Fred Astaire, and Billy Barty. It has an amazing poster, and my wife says that she remembered this movie. I think her family, they always had Dobermans, so I think they watched any, if there was a Doberman movie, they watched it.
Okay, imagine the pitch for that. What about Dobermans that solve mysteries?
I think they also tried to turn it into a TV show.
Wait, what kind of dog was Scooby-Doo? I guess he was supposed to be like a Great Dane or something.
Yeah, not a the Dobermans have those like...
the pointy head.
Those really derpy pointed heads, yeah. Derpy or terrifying, depends on how you look at them, but they can look quite derpy. All right, the star of this film, playing Dr. Anton Fibes, is Vincent Price, who lived 1911 through 1993, the legend himself.
Gotta love him. An actor of great genuine talent who could have kept pressing just to focus on serious film roles, but embraced camp. And that's something I really respect.
Yes. And it was really, really a master of it. Price was active on screen from the late 30s to the early 90s. You know, great voice, great look. Horror icon, could really play a serious threat, but also seemed to have a great sense of humor and was able to play that up. Was active in various genres, especially early on in his career. And you see him, you know, showing up in some serious pictures during that time period for sure. And then he did all sorts of celebrity appearances and product endorsements later in life. seemed to very much, you know, cash in on things to a certain extent. And God bless him, he'd earned it by that point. But
Time Life Enchanted World commercials. Mm-hmm. I think he did commercials for, what are they called? What was that brand of wine coolers?
Yes, where he's dressed like a polar bear. I highly recommend anyone out there just do a YouTube search for Vincent Price commercials, and you'll get numerous results, and they're all great.
Oh, God, if you find the ones where he's doing wine coolers, I don't remember the brand name, but that same brand of wine coolers also has commercials with Grace Jones that are amazing.
Yes. Ultimately, I would say the Vincent Price pop culture footprint is almost just too huge for us to possibly do justice here in a single episode. So for my part, I'm just going to mention a few of my favorites from a few different categories. So first of all, in film, as much as I love this film, again, it is kind of weird to cast Vincent Price in a role where he doesn't actually speak. I think they're much better examples of him acting both as a pure protagonist and also as an antagonist. Roger Corman's Mask of the Red Death is a great example of him in pure villain mode, while in The Tingler we get to see him as kind of a tortured hero.
Wait, is he a hero? No, wait a minute. He's like trying to murder his wife in The Tingler.
Oh, well, yes, he was. But didn't he?
Well, wait, no, I think he sort of is the hero, but he's a bad dude.
Is there a film where he plays like a pure protagonist?
I'm sure there are plenty of The Last Man on Earth, which is one of the film adaptations of I Am Legend.
Yes, by Richard Matheson.
One of the earlier ones. He's in that and he plays the main character. God, how many film adaptations of I Am Legend are there? There's the Omega Man.
Yeah.
There's the one with Will Smith. There's the one with Vincent Price. There are at least three, but there may be more.
Yeah, and I think they're planning on making more. Now, Vincent Price also did a lot of television. One notable thing is he appeared on Night Gallery, I think, a couple of times, including the 1972 episode The Return of the Sorcerer, which is one of the few adaptations of a Clark Ashton Smith short story. When it comes to just pure celebbing, I'd say his 1977 appearance on The Muppet Show is pretty stellar.
That's right in his element. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Price can act opposite a puppet.
Yes, very well. Though of those Muppet shows, if you try and watch them in their entirety, some of them can be a little painful at times. It was a hammy show, not everything holds up all that well. But Price was great on that. Now, when it comes to music and spoken word, this is fast. I wasn't familiar with the pure scope of this, but if you go to discogs.com, Vincent Price has 68 listings. To put that in perspective, Christopher Lee only had 26, which is nothing to sneeze at, but 68 listings.
Does that include Christopher Lee's metal albums?
I think it did, yeah. Now, I won't pretend to have heard even half of the releases from Vincent Price, but I've got to go with his excellent spoken word bit in the 1983 track Thriller. That, you know, is loads of fun. The funk of 40,000 years. And then when it comes to product endorsements, again, the Time Life Books Enchanted Worlds advertisement is great. But also, he did one for Monster Vitamins. That's a lot of fun. It has animated monsters in it, and he's talking. It's a children's vitamin commercial, but you got Vincent Price there. Again, we can't go through everything that Vincent Price was in, but just to mention a few of the big ones, he was in The Ten Commandments, he was in House of Wax, The Fly, House on Haunted Hill, he popped up on the old 60s TV Batman series, he's a voice in The Great Mouse Detective, he plays the villainous rat in that, and then of course his final feature film appearance is in Edward Scissorhands.
Rest in peace, man.
So Vincent Price, his character, Dr. Fibes, is listed in the end credits to this movie as one of two protagonists, which is a humorous, but also in keeping with the strange vibe of the film. The other protagonist is listed as Dr. Vesalius, played by Joseph Cotten. Joseph Cotten is another legend, a star of film, stage, radio, and television, lived 1905 through 1994, probably best remembered for his roles in, I think, three different Orson Welles movies, Citizen Kane in 41, The Magnificent Ambersons in 42, Journey into Fear in 43. He's also known for The Third Man from 49. I think that was the first thing I really remember him from, though I guess I probably watched Citizen Kane around the same time. He was also in 1944's Gaslight, which is where we get the term gaslighting from. Right. And later on, he appeared in such films as Soylent Green in 73 and such Italian films as Marcello Alprandi's 1976 film A Whisper in the Dark and Sergio Martino's excellent Island of the Fishmen, a.k.a. Screamers.
Excellent.
So anything he's in, it's a solid screen presence.
So in this, he plays this character, Dr. Vesalius, who is the last of the enemies targeted for revenge by Dr. Fibes.
Yeah, because this film ultimately follows a pattern that you see in a number of different revenge films with kind of an anti-hero revenge killer at the center is he'll have a number of targets, and you'll start with the targets that are you either don't know much about or who are actively villainous in some way or another, and then you work your way towards a character who is more relatable. And so, you know, it forces you to sort of enjoy the early kills, but feel conflicted about the later kills that are planned. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. AsteproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, some of the other people here. We have Peter Jeffrey in this. Probably not an actor that a lot of people are familiar with. He plays Inspector Harry Trout. He's the hard-nosed British detective on the case. Ultimately has a lot of screen time in this. He lived 1929 through 1999. And he had roles in such films as The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, Midnight Express, The Return of the Pink Panther, and he played the character Count Grendel on Doctor Who, among, I think, some other characters on Doctor Who. He did a lot of TV work.
This is our main Scotland Yard detective trying to solve the case of the doctors being murdered in bizarre ways. Inspector Kilgore Trout.
Yeah. And he's pretty fun because at times he comes off a little bit comedic. Other times he's just kind of just the hard-nosed cop trope.
Yeah. Oh, but we've got to talk about, so in this movie, Dr. Fibes has a sidekick. He has an assistant named Volnavia, and she's great.
Yes, played by Virginia North, who in my notes here, I have 1946 through 2994. I suspect that I have a typo there, and she actually lived to 1994.
2004.
Make that 2004, not 2994. Anyway, she was a fashion model who only appeared in a handful of titles, including this, which was her final film. And she also pops up in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. She wasn't a Bond girl, however, as the main love interest in that movie was played by Diana Rigg.
the great Diana Rigg. But yeah, I really enjoy North as Volnavia in this movie. She, this is also both of our sort of villain roles, the killers in this movie, do not speak directly. Vincent Price only speaks through like a tube in his neck plugged into a phonograph in some scenes. And Volnavia doesn't speak at all, though she does play a mean violin as like doctors are being drained of all their blood, and she can wield a golden axe.
That's right. So yeah, she's stylish and she's helpful. Now, we're not going to list all of the various doctors who are murdered by Dr. Fibes, but two of them are noteworthy. There's a Dr. Longstreet played by Terry Thomas. That, of course, is Terry hyphen Thomas, who lived 1911 through 1990.
This is one of those guys who you just see his face, and even if it's a still photograph, you can imagine the sounds he's making, and there's something like,
Yes, yeah, he, tremendous British comedian and character actor, who really excelled at playing kind of like bumbling fops and upper crust weirdos, and there's a certain type of role that Terry Thomas just absolutely excelled at.
In this movie, he's a little bit Harvey Korman, but also a little, you're going to balk for a second, I think, but a little bit Wings Hauser.
Well, he definitely chews the scenes with a Wings Hauser-ian intensity. Terry Thomas was in loads of stuff, but I'd say probably the biggest film he was in, the most most well-known, is perhaps It's a Mad, 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 Mad World from 63. He also pops up in Danger Diabolic from 68, which is another highly stylish film, and that one was, of course, featured on Mystery Science Theater 3000. He was also a great voice actor. If you've seen Walt Disney's Robin Hood, the animated Robin Hood with all the animal characters from 1973, he is the voice of Sir Hiss the Snake.
He's sort of the toady to the Cowardly Lion Prince.
I believe so, yes. All right, another doctor. We have Dr. Hargreaves, played by Alex Scott. Alex Scott was in Next of Kin from 1982, which we just covered on Weird House Cinema. So I won't go into detail about him, but you know, if you want to hear more about Alex Scott, we discuss him in the cast section for our previous episode.
He was the doctor in Next of Kin?
Yes, he was the doctor. Oh,
and he's a doctor in this one, too.
Yeah, yeah. Distinctive face. Guess
in this one, he's a psychiatrist, right? He puts on the frog mask.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, another small but fun role, we have Hugh Griffith popping up playing a rabbi who's called in or called upon by the inspectors to give some expert advice on some of the clues they've discovered. Griffith lived 1912 through 1980, a Welsh actor who actually won a Best Supporting Oscar, Actor Oscar in 1960 for Ben-Hur.
Hmm.
Now, this is one where I don't think she was actually credited originally on this film, but you might say that this film also stars a photograph of Carolyn Monroe.
That's right. When we actually see, so she plays Dr. Fibes' deceased wife. And at some point later in the movie, we actually see her dead body, but I don't think that's Carolyn Monroe.
Yeah, I think it's just photographs of her that are used, which is interesting, especially since she did go on to, she was in a number of films. She was a pinup model, an actress who I think ultimately seems to have stolen many like 70s film nerd's heart. Because she pops up in films like The Spy Who Loved Me from 77, The Golden Voyage of Sinbad from 73, Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter from 74, At the Earth's Core from 76, Star Crash from 78. Star Crash. Dracula AD 1972 from 1972. And then she was in some stuff in the 80s of note, like Maniac and Slaughter High. It barely counts as an appearance. Like, you could say that Rita Hayworth is just as much an acting component in Shawshank Redemption as Carolyn Monroe is actually a cast member of this film.
Though her photo does get a lot of screen time, as we have multiple scenes of Vincent Price just worshiping a headshot of Carolyn Monroe.
Yeah, all but praying to her.
You know, another tie-in to a recent episode of the show with Beastmaster 2. apparently Carolyn Monroe was at some point in the running to play the character Ursa in Superman, the villain from the planet Krypton, the part that eventually went to the actress Sarah Douglas, who played the sorceress in Beastmaster 2, and who I thought was by far the best part of that movie. But I think Monroe turned down the role in Superman so she could be in that Roger Moore movie.
I don't have a real clear memory of that Bond movie, other than
Spy
it's
Who Loved Me?
Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah.
It's the first one with Jaws. It established Jaws. But it's in that regard, it's just a necessary precursor to Moonraker.
Yeah, that's true. So that one was actually well regarded by critics when it came out. If you watch it now, it's, you know, like all those Roger Moore movies, is extremely cheesy. I recall that one also being one of the ones with the most just evil James Bond in it. Like, I recall there's a scene where some assassin's trying to shoot at him, and he's like kissing a woman, and then he literally just turns and uses her as a human shield to block the bullet from the assassin. I mean, I think it's implied that she's like setting a trap for him, but still, like, come on, dude, that's pretty rough.
Yeah.
So that's a mean Roger Moore James Bond, though. It has some good stuff about it. The villain in it likes to feed people to sharks, because of course, where that's the guy, he's got like a gun under the long table. I think that's also the one where it's the first one with Jaws in it, and Jaws gets thrown to some sharks, but he defeats the sharks by biting them.
He bites the shark. Yes. Okay. Yeah. See, I mostly remember it for Jaws.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the music on this one. The music for this film, though a number of different songs are featured in it, the actual score is composed by Basil Kirchin, who lived 1927 through 2005. A British composer and musician responsible for the scores of such films as 67's The Shuttered Room, starring Oliver Reed, this movie, the 1974 movie The Freakmaster, which I've been tempted to watch for this show. It's kind of a 70s take on Todd Browning's Freaks, and it has Donald Pleasance, Tom Baker, and Brad Harris in it.
Oh, well, I like that cast list, but something about the idea of a 70s take on Freaks does not appeal to me.
Yeah, I that's probably what's kind of held me back. I know it has, I think Tom Baker plays like a giant, like a tall mutant character, and there's like a plant man in it. So it's got some attractive elements to it, plus Donald Pleasance. But yeah, I haven't actually watched it yet. I've had it like, in the playlist, ready to go. Now, Kirchin did not return for Fibes 2, but he's pretty interesting fellow. I was looking into him a bit. He came up in big band, but then he also got into electronic music and experimental music and tape manipulation. And so you've had a number of individuals have pointed to him as an important influence, like Brian Eno, Broadcast, also Nurse with Wound. That's the project from Stephen Stapleton. If you're not familiar with Nurse with Wound, it's a kind of an early industrial, but also kind of noise, weird musical project that, I have to say, I like Nurse with Wound, and then there's a lot of Nurse with Wound music that I cannot listen to. And if you played it for me, I would say, I hate that. Please don't play it. But then there's other stuff that's really solid. So I don't know. If you're going to check something out, I would say check out Thunder Perfect Mind or Rock and Roll Station. So I think the Five score kind of reflects some of these elements. There's certainly a lot of big band notes as well, of course. And then we have all this organ music and other tracks that are featured. It gets a little noisy and percussive in places, especially when things are getting weird or they want to amp up the tension. But it doesn't really get like Nurse with Wound levels of strange. But this score is often held up as an excellent genre score, though it's, again, it's kind of a unique beast. It's widely available in all formats, though I think most of the vinyl out there is older. I haven't seen any evidence of any like super cool re-releases from recent years.
Though I would emphasize that the music in this movie is a kind of hybrid product, because on one level you've got this weird score, but then you also have a lot of directly diegetic music taking place on screen that's like jazzy big band numbers and old sort of crooner standards.
Yeah. And finally, since this is such a visually luscious movie, we have to mention the set designer, Brian Eatwell, who lived 1939 through 2007. The sets in this movie are just to die for. So props to Eatwell and everyone else involved in creating these weird interiors. He was a British production designer and art director. He designed the sets for both Dr. Fibes movies, as well. He also served as production designer on such films as the 1971 Australian movie Walkabout, 1973's Godspell, The Three Musketeers, and The Four Musketeers from 73 and 74. 1976's The Man Who Fell to Earth, starring David Bowie. 78 Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, The Onion Field in 79, and the 1981 Killer Lion movie, Savage Harvest.
See, 73, I guess there was only one movie adaptation of Godspell. Is that with Victor Garber?
Yeah, I assume this is one. This is, as far as I know, the Godspell. This is the one I've seen. And it does have, I can see the connection here. Like there's a, you know, between this this weird Broadway musical brought to life and the visual elements that are in play in Godspell, like they compare reasonably well to some of the sensibilities we see in Dr. Fibes.
Though Fibes never wears the Superman shirt.
No.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
All right, you want to talk about the plot?
Oh, let's talk about this plot.
Okay, so it starts very strong. You know, lights come up on Baroque organ music, and you see a player in a hood and cloak. So this black hood, it's kind of shiny. The cloak almost looks like it is wet or oily. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just the material. But the organ player is sitting at the instrument and then being like raised up on as if on an elevator.
Yeah, it is this elevator powered, super moody organ, the supervillain organ playing area. It's like, you know, it's a familiar trope. It's very Phantom of the Opera, but then just played up tremendously. You know, the visuals of this are just, again, just so luscious.
And then, like, the movie just starts at maximum WTF. Like, the how to describe what comes next. I don't, it's a recurring theme, but so the organ player plays while the credits roll, and then he gets up and he descends a staircase, and the camera pulls back to reveal what appears to be a musical ensemble made of embodied humanoid automata, like the Rockafire explosion, like Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz Pizza. But instead of having banjo bears and cool rats, they are tuxedo dudes in Michael Myers masks, and they're all playing tubas and drums and stuff. And then he conducts them as if they were an orchestra.
Yeah, and the drum informs us what the name of this group is. It's Dr. Fibes Clockwork Wizards. So it's already off to a tremendous start. Like, this is a film that's so bold in its stylish weirdness that we just kick things off with an extended horror pipe organ number in this underground nightclub. And then we're getting no dialogue, no real, you know, human faces or human voices or anything, just like pure performative weirdness.
Yes. And it commits so hard. Like, it goes on, like you're saying, without dialogue for a while. So the organist in the cloak steps back, and then there's a whole dance number. Virginia North comes out in this amazing, I don't know what to call it, the sugar plum fairy costume. Like, she's wearing this weird white dress with a strange golden vertical crown on her head, and they dance together while the robots play.
Yeah, and it's tremendous. Like, it just sucks you absolutely in. You're like, it works on so many levels. Like, it sets the tone for a film where it's really hard to have expectations about what's going to happen, because you're not entirely sure what this film's values are. I kept thinking about that, and ultimately made the last 20 minutes of the film extra terrifying for me, because it's like, I don't know how a film like this ends. I don't know what it considers a proper ending, because it feels like it's from another dimension.
Can we stop, though, and describe the set in this room? Because they will return to it many times throughout the movie. I was calling this the Total Party House, because, of course, you have the ensemble there. And it's sort of always a party when the automata are playing. But it's like a room with a giant, I guess, marble floor, and then like balcony levels surrounding it all around. And what are some of the things in there? Like, there's a table on one side of the room that has all of these busts, or the upper parts of mannequins. I think there are 9 of them, each one with a ceiling lamp hanging over it that I think they're supposed to be made of wax or something. Like, we see them melting later. And the organ is up on the stage at one end of the room. The room is decorated with all these satin curtains and these paintings on the columns leading up to the balcony with, like, these I don't know what you like pharaoh heads and weird symbols. It's a trip.
Yeah, it is a space that it feels performative. It feels like a nightclub, but it also feels like a temple. And it is kind of like his temple to holy revenge, a temple to his love for his departed wife. Those heads represent each of the victims that he is going to kill, the objects of his revenge. So it has a real strong ritualistic and performative vibe to it.
Well, after the dance is over, the guy in the cloak, he goes to operate a chain pulley. And I guess we can refer to these characters because we know who they're going to be. This is Dr. Fibes and Vulvania. And so he goes to operate a chain pulley in the middle of the room, and it lowers something that looks like a shrouded bird cage into a subfloor basement. And then Vulvania goes down to the subfloor and she kind of straps it onto, I think, a trailer on the back of a car. Mm-hmm. She straps it down with a leather belt, and then they get into the car and drive away. And we see them driving the car, and it's the funniest shot. So Vulvania is, I don't think that's supposed to be her hair. Maybe it is. Her head is covered in this big ball of fur, and I guess it's supposed to be a fur cap.
I think so, yeah.
Meanwhile, Fibes is sitting in the back seat being chauffeured with just like wearing the black hood and with a stocking over his face. So he's just, faceless terror.
Yeah, it's worth noting that both of these characters have so many different costume changes. Yeah. that revenge, they say revenge is a dish best served cold, but that doesn't mean you can't style it up. That doesn't mean you can't change your cloak frequently, that you can't engage in any number of rituals. They're heavy into this vengeance game.
So they're headed out somewhere, and we cut to a bedroom. We assume is where they're headed. It's this guy in a lavish bedchamber with I don't know, fancy stuff all over the walls, like paintings mm-hmm. of horses and markers to indicate this is a rich guy. But then, in the ceiling above this guy's bed, a skylight in the ceiling opens up, and we see Fibes and Volvania lowering in that bird cage from earlier, and then they retract it. They pull it back up with a trap door in the bottom of the cage hanging open. So it seems they've released something into the room, and this is the first murder of the movie.
That's right. It's going to be death by fruit bat, just like in the Old Testament.
Okay, we'll get into the biblical accuracy maybe in a little bit. I don't know about that. But so the guy in bed, he is attacked by bats. They're like bats crawling on him, and he's like, ah! And then we do the intro in reverse. The cloaked figure and Volvania, they return home. They turn off the Michael Myers Rockafire band, and then he descends into the floor playing his organ. But the next morning, in the bedroom of the victim, we get to see some butler action. Butler comes in with eggs on toast, and like a bat lands on the eggs, and there are bats everywhere. And the guy's face, we see him laying in bed. It has been fully oatmealified.
Yep. Death by fruit bat.
And then we see the first of a ritual that we'll repeat throughout the movie, which is that Dr. Fibes, back at his party house, he puts a pendant with a significant looking symbol on it on one of the heads of the mannequins or the busts on the edge of the big concert hall room. And then he burns the face of the bust with a candle. But the next morning we get to see the police investigating, and the police are... they're played for comedy in this movie. They're all bumbling. One of them says, "It's a strange business, Tom. A man literally shredded to death right in the heart of London." We find out that the victim was a medical doctor, and the police notice something. They notice that this vicious fruit bat shredding is similar to the recent death of another doctor in town who was killed by a swarm of bees in his library. And they say, almost turning to look at the camera, they say, "His face looked as if it were covered in boils."
And that will be important shortly.
So then we go back to the Total Party House, and we see Vincent Price putting on his face. We don't know what Dr. Fibes' real face looks like, but once he does a bunch of stuff to it, he looks like Vincent Price. And I love this. I love everything about it. I love the weird sets. I love Vincent Price with shaggy Ringo hair. Mm-hmm. And I love how they make Vincent Price's actual face look like a sagging rubber mask on his head.
They do, yeah. They give him this really waxy color, and yeah, they add some other little elements to it. And he also, you know, of course, it's Vincent Price, so he has a great mustache, but also really nice sideburns.
Yes, but also dark rings under his eyes always. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he looks very, very haunted. Even though he's not in pure monster mode right now, he still looks kind of monstrous and unnatural.
But the movie wastes no time. It is immediately on to the next doctor murder. So we meet Dr. Hargraves again. He's at some swanky party where it's like fancy people all wearing animal masks of some kind. And Price is there in a mask. He gives a frog mask to Dr. Hargraves. Dr. Hargraves seems to just accept it. And Vincent Price helps him put it on. And he like does the catch on it, and Hargraves introduces himself. He says, "I'm a psychiatrist, you know, a head shrinker." But this frog mask, it's a trap from Saw. It's like a head crushing action mask where it just keeps ratcheting itself tighter. And the doctor staggers around trying to get help from a drunken lizard and some oaf in a pig mask, but there's no way of saving him. His head is crushed, and he lays there with the frog mask and blood coming out of it, while people in horse head masks and other weird costumes look on in amazement.
So counting the off-screen death, that's like the third death. So three down.
Right. And we get a rundown of this by the police in the next scene, because there's a scene at Scotland Yard where the cops are talking about how they don't want this story about animal-themed doctor murders to get out to the press. There's something that characters say multiple times in this movie. They're like, medical men die all the time.
I mean, true, as in because human beings die all the time. But under suspicious circumstances with animal themes, I don't know that that's like statistically a thing.
Yeah. So Inspector Trout is, he's tracking now. He's like, wait a minute, bats, bees, and frogs. So what's going on here? But then it's immediately on to the next doctor murder. This just, they're coming thick and fast. And the next one is Dr. Longstreet. Is this Terry Thomas?
This is Terry Thomas. And it is such a Terry Thomas scene.
So when we first meet him, he's immediately furtively ripping into a cylindrical parcel. I think he doesn't want his housekeeper to see what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And he's acting all sweaty and squirrely. And he appears to, what's going on is that he seems to have received a canister of racy film reels from the East. And he plans to watch them on his rattling projector while absolutely chugging red wine tonight, since the housekeeper is going to be out for the evening.
Yeah.
And this is the part where, so we're watching, you know, he puts on his film reel and he's watching. It's of like a lady dancing with a snake.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's like a belly dancing snake dance kind of a film, you know, but also a very old film. This is not something that, it brings me back to the question. I'm not sure exactly when this film is supposed to be taking place. It's not supposed to take place in the 70s.
No, I think it's supposed to take place in like the 20s, probably.
Okay. So maybe it is a current film that he has acquired here. Okay.
But yeah, Terry Thomas, he is a dirty chap, and he looks a little bit Wingshauser-ish here. Mm-hmm. He's watching inappropriate film reels, chugging red wine out of a snifter and like licking his lips so that he's just being gross.
Yes. It's a great scene.
But then, here comes, of course, Dr. Fibes and Vulvania show up at his house. You know, they walk in and he's just kind of like, huh, what's going on? And well, they sit him down in a chair, strap him in, and then drain out all of his blood.
Yep. Put it in bottles up there on the, up there above the fireplace, I believe, or on a shelf. So that's four doctors down.
But this one kind of breaks the animal theme. This one is blood, huh? What's going on? But mm-hmm. The police put together a different pattern. They figure out that all four of these doctors worked for another doctor named Dr. Vesalius, and this is Joseph Cotton. And so Inspector Trout goes to his house to meet him and see if he can make any sense of this. And I like how when he gets there, Vesalius's teenage son, Lim, is very impressed by the presence of Scotland Yard.
Yes.
And Vesalius's house looks like a hair salon.
It's so stylish. There's like, you know, African masks on the wall. There's this like satyr statue with a light above it.
Shiny surfaces everywhere, potted plants, mirrors on the walls, and a lot of fancy chairs just lined up along the walls. Does his house have a waiting room? I don't know. But Dr. Vesalius, we see, is a model train guy. Rails and train cars are scattered all over the floor when Trout shows up, and Trout fills him in. He's like, okay, here's what's going on. And he's like, do you know why someone would want to kill all of your associates? And of course, Vesalius has no idea. He says the same thing as the guy earlier. He's like, men in my profession die every day of the year. I don't know how often in like frog related deaths though, but
yeah.
But anyway, when the police find out about the Longstreet murder, here they get a clue, which is the pendant left behind at the scene. Fibes actually drops the pendant there by accident. And so they find it. They take it back to a goldsmith, the person who made it. And the goldsmith tells them, yep, this is an amulet. I made 10 of them. It was a lady who ordered them. And Trout is like, was she smart? And then he says, fashionable.
Yeah, it's a fun scene because there's a lot of goofy back and forth between these two characters.
But the jeweler informs Trout that the sign on the amulet is something requested by the person who bought them, and it's a symbol in Hebrew. So the inspector then has a new clue and takes it to a rabbi to get the rundown. And here we get a major exposition scene. So the rabbi tells him that the symbol is Hebrew for blood. And, okay, this makes sense because Longstreet was drained of all blood. But it's also notable for being one of the 10 plagues of Egypt, of course, turning the Nile into blood. And so here we get a speech about the 10 plagues of Egypt. So this is from the story of the Exodus in the Torah. And the context is that the Jews are in bondage in Egypt, and God keeps sending plagues against Egypt to force the Pharaoh to release them.
Hmm.
Here we get a list of the plagues, which are in order. And I'm not saying these are necessarily the correct plagues, but this is what the movie says. It says they are boils, bats, frogs, blood, rats, hail, beasts, locusts, death of the firstborn, and darkness.
All right. So we've had the first four, so we're almost halfway through.
I feel like I must flag as kind of a Bible nerd, like compare that to the actual list in a good translation of Exodus. I don't think that really matches. But anyway, so we get more scenes with Dr. Fibes back at the party house, and this is where we first see him speaking to a shrine of the image of a woman we find out is his wife. This is the one played by the photo of Carolyn Monroe, again, Stella Starr. And he's like worshiping this headshot of her. He's got a whole table, I think, of her belongings laid out. And we mentioned earlier that Vincent Price never actually speaks out of his mouth in this movie. So the only times he talks are by plugging a phonograph into a jack in the back of his neck. And this connects to another weird scene later where it looks like he's drinking a beverage by pouring it into the back of his neck.
Yes. At one point, he tastes something he's mixed up on his finger by like sticking his finger back there to where there. We never see it, but presumably there's some sort of a mouth hole back there that has been, I don't know if it's surgical or technological, but not knowing for sure makes it all the more impressive.
When he's tasting something, is that the Brussels sprout goo?
Yes, the Brussels sprout.
We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But this also provides some exposition because talking through the phonograph, he gives this whole fiery speech and he says, nine killed you, nine shall die, nine eternities in doom. But we also get some exposition on the other side with Dr. Vesalius and the police. So he and Trout do some research and they figure out that there was actually only one case where Vesalius worked with all of the doctors who are now dead. And that was on one patient named Victoria Regina Fibes. And we get the whole backstory. So she had some medical emergency. They were operating on her. Her husband was someone named Dr. Anton Fibes. And as Anton Fibes was racing to the hospital where his wife was in surgery, his car went off a cliff and exploded. And he was incinerated. Or was he? And they reason from this. Okay, so the rest of the surgical team that worked on this case of Victoria Fibes, they all need to be put under police protection. But the police don't really get there fast enough for most of them. Because the next scene is where Vincent Price uses an air conditioner in a car to kill a guy.
Yep. And in the carriage there, they just kind of like pull him over, incapacitate the driver, and then just hook him up to the AC and freeze him solid.
And there's like snow blowing in his face from this machine. Yeah, it's pretty good.
And this one is a scene too that's feels very Avengers, in its weirdness. You know, because we got like a little bit of super science, but in weirdness, and we're also getting into that territory here too with our villain, where our villain is he's not incapable of error. We saw him drop the amulet earlier, but he's really thought out everything and is a man of multiple talents, a real villainous polymath.
Yes. In fact, at the very next scene, we start to learn about all of his different expertise. So first of all, we get a clue for Scotland Yard, which comes from Dr. Vesalius's son, Lim, who says he was in the music shop, I think, talking to the owner there about the great organists. And he just happens to name some of the great organists offhand, Bridges, Drew, and Fibes. And so they're like, oh, I see. Dr. Anton Fibes, he was a great organist, and he's apparently been paying the local organ shop guy recently, even though he's supposed to be dead. So they take a trip out to the crypt where Mr. and Mrs. Fibes were supposedly laid to rest. and we get more discussion about his background, they say, okay, he's not only a concert organist, he's also a PhD in theology. And I thought this was hilarious. Inspector Trout is like, that would explain his knowledge of the 10 plagues of Egypt. Seems like rather basic knowledge. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not really a deep cut.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
But another really weird thing here is that, wait a minute. Okay, so Fibes is a concert organist and a PhD in theology. I started to wonder, that is a really weird coincidence if this is not supposed to be a play on Albert Schweitzer, but I don't know why else that would be. So do you know anything about Schweitzer?
I didn't know a lot about him until you mentioned the possible connection, and I read like just a basic bio on him, yeah.
Yeah, he's an interesting figure who was a medical doctor, a concert organist, and one of the most important scholars ever of the New Testament. He's largely responsible in historical Jesus scholarship for putting forward probably the reigning historical understanding of Jesus today, which is that he was an apocalyptic Jewish prophet, somebody who was predicting the imminent end of the world. But I was just thinking, like, it doesn't make a lot of sense otherwise, but it would be, that is such a weirdly specific thing, an organist and a PhD in theology. I don't know.
So. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's one way to flesh out your villain. Pick an historical figure and say, what if we made them into a supervillain? If they were a supervillain, what would it be like?
Yeah, so I don't know. Strange choice, but interesting. Anyway, at the crypt, we've got, they're like, well, let's just pop open these coffins and have us a look see here.
Yeah, there's no official process here. They just rip them open.
Just pop them open, yeah. So they pop open the Dr. Fibes tomb. It has only ashes in it, but whose ashes? We don't know. They pop open the Mrs. Fibes tomb. Nothing, completely empty. One of the next scenes I recall is Inspector Trout back at the office receiving just a whacking chew out from his superiors. Yeah. They, you know, he's what is the, do you remember this boss's name? The guy who's yelling at him for like a minute straight.
I believe this is James Grout just playing Sergeant. I could be wrong on that, but it's a real fun role. Cause he's a real hard ass.
Yeah, he's demanding that they solve the case immediately. You know, we can't have these weird doctor murders just hanging out there because there is public outcry, and that's falling on me. And the big boss also yells at Trout for not wearing his suit jacket inside. So he's a real stickler. And then we get another doctor murder scene. This one I thought was kind of strange, but it was the rat attack in the plane. So one of the doctors is an amateur pilot. He takes his plane up, and then while in there, I guess Dr. Fibes and Vulvania have put rats in the plane.
Yeah,
the rats attack him, and then he crashes the plane.
I guess part of it's the sequential nature of this, and also the Britishness of it. But yeah. I was reminded of Psychomania a lot in this, because there's that whole section in Psychomania where you have all the bikers trying to kill themselves in unique ways so they can come back as undead bikers, and there's kind of like each one's more ridiculous than the last.
That is a great sequence. Oh, Psychomania. Oh, that's also one of the best, I think. Yeah.
Speaking of the best, the next murder. Oh, it's one of the cheapest, where you're kind of like, I don't know, Fives, you're kind of really stretching the theme here. But on the other level, like absolutely top marks for creativity and style.
So the police have not been able to protect any of the doctors yet. So they finally get to the next one before Fives can. They're at his gentleman's club in London, I guess. And they're like, okay, we're going to take you into protective custody. We'll make sure nothing happens to you. So they're walking out of the club, and as they open the door, you just hear like an arrow hitting the target sound effect. And he has been pierced through with the horn of a brass unicorn.
Yes.
And they say it was fired from a catapult.
Yeah. And this is one of those moments in the film. It just reminds you, like, don't try and think too forensically about this motion picture. If you're like, well, how did they get lay a catapult trap there? And how did they work out the aerodynamics of launching like this brass unicorn at this guy? Like, well, just don't worry about that. Just trust us. It happened.
The unicorn horn has a spiral pattern on it, and they have to unscrew the guy from the wall. They show like his feet going around.
Yeah. Yes. It's such great gallows humor. I love it.
But then, so you got this extremely silly scene. And then right after it, there's kind of a serious scene where Fibes he's again worshiping the headshot of Carolyn Monroe. But in this one, he recites part of a wonderful love poem by John Donne, The Good Morrow. Do you know this one, Rob?
I wasn't familiar with this one.
You might remember lines from it. You know, people might have read it at school, and sometimes it has the lines, if ever any beauty I did see, which I desired and got, 'twas but a dream of thee. Well, he doesn't say those lines in the movie. Instead, he quotes some lines from the last stanza of the poem, but he quotes them out of order. So the last stanza is, my face in thine eye, thine in mine appears, and true plain hearts do in the faces rest. Where can we find two better hemispheres, without sharp north, without declining west? Whatever dies was not mixed equally. If our two loves be one, or thou and I love so alike that none do slacken, none can die. It's a great poem, but he reads the first four lines of that stanza, but he reads lines three and four and then one and two. So the ones about the hemispheres and then the in the faces rest.
Well, you know, he's put a lot of work into this whole revenge cycle and ritual. So, you know, he's figured out how to mix it up a little bit. He's got to get it just right. There have been many takes.
But then it goes straight from that into probably, I would say, the weirdest murder in the entire movie. Would you agree?
Yeah. It's also, this is nice that the murders all feel a little bit different and they're presented in different ways. Like, we get no clue at all about the setup for the brass unicorn catapult murder.
Yeah.
But then
we don't
see
them
one,
making the unicorn or anything. Right.
No extended scenes of that. But this one is all about the prep work. In fact, you just sit there watching this weirdness take place and you're like, what are they doing? What of the 10 plagues of Egypt involve Brussels sprouts?
Let's talk about Brussels sprouts. What is happening? Volvania is walking around dressed like Queen Elizabeth and holding trays of Brussels sprouts. And Vincent Price is standing over a giant pot of boiling Brussels sprouts. And he's like picking Brussels sprouts from her hands and throwing some of them into the pot and throwing other ones away. He's inspecting them to see if they're just right. I don't know why. I don't know how this works, but he's like making... He's turning the Brussels sprouts into some kind of essence of Brussels sprout.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure what was going on. I was like, well, we know that, you know, obviously he was heavily disfigured, and I think by this point we already know that he drinks through his neck. So I was thinking, well, maybe this is just what Dr. Fibes consumes. Maybe he's on a liquid diet and he likes Brussels sprouts, and Brussels sprouts are good for you, and Brussels sprouts are great. So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe not in this form, but...
no, this is the worst. I mean, I love Brussels sprouts, like good and like roasted. Mm-hmm. The idea of boiling Brussels sprouts down to a paste is one of the most disgusting things I can imagine. Brussels sprouts in wet heat. No, no, no.
Yeah. But watching this, I was like, I have no idea where this is going, but I'm all in. Let's see.
Well, where is it going? We've got one last person on the list. It's a nurse who worked on the Victoria Fibes case. And so the police are trying to protect her. They send her into a room in some building where every surface is green.
Yeah, very nice. And fits with the theme of green goo.
So they're like, okay, go in this room and sleep. And she's like, okay. They tell her to take a sleeping pill. Mm-hmm. And I guess that would explain why she is slow to wake later. Dr. Fibes sneaks into the floor above her, drills a hole in the floor, hooks up a machine to pump green goo. I guess this is what he made out of the Brussels sprouts into the room. It dribbles all over some globe lamp and then dribbles all over her face. And then he releases locusts into the room via a tube, and they march single file. And then they go down, and I guess they start eating the green goo off of her because they like plants. I don't know. And then they just strip her flesh down to the bones.
Yeah, it just completely deflesh her skeleton.
Yeah, piranify her.
Mm-hmm.
Is that weird enough for you?
It's such a weird scene. And of course, you know, it's completely unrealistic, but kudos. He was able to work. It was like, once I saw the bugs, I was like, ah, you're doing the locusts. Okay, now it all makes sense.
He made Brussels sprout goo, then used... Okay.
Well, you know, he's been working up... Again, a lot of work went into this. He probably tried different, liquefied vegetables and liquefied plants to see what would get the locust excited enough to completely consume a human body's flesh, and this is what worked.
And she never woke up the whole time.
No. Well, she'd taken a sleeping pill, so she was out. Yeah.
But then finally, we get down to the climax, which is when Vesalius realizes that, the biblical plague falling to him is the death of the firstborn. Mm-hmm. His organist's son, his son Lim, has been kidnapped by Dr. Fibes. And here we come to our James Bond trap ending. So Vesalius finds out that Fibes has his kid. He knocks out Inspector Trout, who tries to stop him. And then he heads over to the party house, where all kinds of things are happening. Volnavia is wearing this amazing like red cloak with a golden sun with all these like insect legs on it, and this hat with peacock things shooting off of it. I don't know.
She's the high priestess of the revenge, I think, at this point.
Yes, beautiful. And this the automata are playing their big band music, and Dr. Vesalius arrives and oh God, they explain this whole thing to him. They're like, okay, you've got 6 minutes to operate on your son to get a key out of his body that I've placed in his body that you will have to use to unlock the table, which so you can move the table that he's on so that this timer doesn't release a bunch of acid onto him.
Right. It's like, This is where I was definitely thinking about like the Saw movies and all, yeah. But like really Jigsaw, just a rank amateur with no yes. style at all compared yeah. to Dr. Fibes, because as grotesque as this sounds, and it does come off as like legitimately kind of, ugh, at this point. But it's still beautifully rendered, and you know, this white background. It's very stylish, and it also works really well. I feel like the tension really builds in this part of the movie because, like I referenced earlier, we're at the part where we're past the victims where we can be like, okay, that guy seems sleazy. I guess it's okay if our unrealistic movie villain kills them. But now, like, we're dealing with the doctor alone. We haven't really seen anything to any reason to hate him, and his son even more so. Like, he is an innocent when it comes to the death of Fives' wife. No matter how you tease apart the details of her demise.
Right. So Vesalius is he's set into it. He's trying to get the task done. Meanwhile, Volnavia goes to grab a solid gold axe and just starts hacking up the whole place. I guess, you know, Fibes is like, we're done. Destroy everything. So she's at it. We get a Fibes face reveal.
Yes.
Where what is his real face? It's I don't know how to describe it. It's a skull face.
Yeah, it's a like very, very Phantom of the Opera skeleton face. On the posters, you see some like mechanical elements that are part of it. Like, you know, he's, you know, touching on the fact that he's also kind of made a, have some clockwork elements to himself because he has this big showdown, right, where he's talking about, how the doctors can't be trusted. The doctor said he wouldn't survive, but he used his own ingenuity to and his knowledge of music and acoustics to allow himself to speak again. And he also has that great line there where he says, I've killed 9 times in my life. How many murders may be attributed to you? Speaking to the doctor.
Yeah.
So he comes down there. Yeah, he takes the mask off because his whole thing is like, soon your son will be disfigured by acid and he'll look just like me. And then, of course, the doctor continues to try and frantically work this surgery. And meanwhile, he just kind of like backs up and scoots into the elevator leaves him to try and pull it off.
Now, Vesalius succeeds. The son is not harmed, but Fibes does get away and the police arrive. Oh, and there when the police arrive, Volnavia is standing there, I guess, ready to attack with the solid gold axe. But then she stands under the acid machine and she gets acided.
Yeah, she gets acid slimed. We don't actually see her melt or anything, but it's an implied melting. And I guess, you know, she's not a good character. She's
been doing a lot of murder.
A lot of murders, so it feels fair.
Oh, but then Dr. Fibes, he basically gets away with it because what does he do? He goes down and we find out, oh, there's Mrs. Fibes in a sort of a crypt with a robotic lifting or mechanically lifting lid. He gets into the crypt next to her, I guess planning to be interred alongside her body, and then hooks up a machine to replace his blood with embalming fluid. And we see it like coming out of these yellow, very clearly labeled beakers that say embalming fluid. And so he's going down there, I guess, getting embalmed in real time. And when the police inspectors show up, they were like, wait a minute, what was the last plague? Big stinger, of course, Plague of Darkness, and the lights go out.
Yeah, and we get the credits roll. And this is in the credits where we see both doctors are listed as the protagonists, which I like. Yeah. And then what song is playing over the end credits, just to add to the utter weirdness of this movie?
Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yes. Oh, it's so good. And then at the very end, you get a little stinger. You get an evil Dr. Fibes, Vincent Price laugh. Oh God, I love it. There's just in the last 20 minutes, there's so many weird touches. Like I love how when he self embalms himself alive, the embalming fluid is this bright yellow opposite the bright red of the blood. It made me think, I think Phantasm 2 has bright yellow embalming fluid. I have no idea what color embalming fluid actually is, but I hope it's bright mustard yellow, like in these motion pictures.
Mm.
There's the lid to the casket.
Oh, what about that?
Oh, it has like this elaborate sun and moon and earth, astrological thing going on.
Amazing. Great set design. This one's a real winner. Dr. Fibes is the best.
Absolutely. Yeah, this one's a lot of fun. Highly recommend it. Just a weird, fun picture. Probably not for the wee kids or anything, but
unless we say otherwise, that applies to any movie we talk about here.
Right. But a lot of fun for just about everybody else. This one is currently hard to stream anywhere as of this recording, at least in the United States. There's an old DVD available in the United States, and that is what I rented from Videodrome to watch it. There's a nice Arrow Video Blu-ray for regions B/2 out there. But luckily, the folks at Videodrome informed me that a new Blu-ray edition is about to come out from Kino Lorber. It's going to come out next month. And it's a two-pack with both Fibes movies in it, part one and the sequel. So if you're excited to check out this film, well, hey, it's about here. And who knows, a lot of times when these films come out like this, it opens up streaming options as well, at least in subsequent months. So I feel like Fibes is returning in grandiose fashion, which, of course, fits him perfectly.
I can't wait. I will probably be trying to grab one of those.
Yeah, Kino Lorber, they tend to do a really good job. All right. Anything else you want to say about Dr. Fibes? I mean, there's so many. This is one of those movies that's just so rich with weirdness that we didn't even have time to touch on everything. There's so many great shots, so many nice little details that are either added to a performance or certainly to the background. For instance, I feel like we could have just described his organ that he plays.
Oh, yeah, the glowing red organ.
Oh, yeah. It's just so beautifully, gothically, supervillain stylish. Oh, it's just, it has to be seen.
Don't watch this movie if you're making Brussels sprouts for dinner.
All right. We're going to go ahead and close out this episode. But as always, we'd love to hear from everyone out there. Any Fibes fans have any tidbits they want to share with us? Write in. Let us know. Weird House Cinema comes out every Friday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. We are primarily a podcast about science and, sometimes mythology and culture and history and so forth. But on Fridays, we set most of that aside and we just focus in on a weird film like this one. Core episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind come out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Artifact or Monster Fact on Wednesday. And on Mondays, we do listener mail.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.